Welcome to the NFL Legends Podcast, an NFL podcast for the players by the players. Here is your host, 14-year NFL veteran and Hall of Famer, Aeneas Williams.
Hello, and welcome to NFL Legends Podcast. I'm Aeneas Williams. As part of our storyteller series, we invite legends to come on and tell their stories. Today, we have a legend who's reached great heights in business and actual heights as he tries to become the first NFL legend to climb each of the seven summits. Please welcome Mark Patterson.
Thank you.
Mark, man, you look like you're ready to play.
I'm ready to go right now,
man. You're ripped up.
Yeah.
Now, do you have to use physical weights, or are you all of this mountain climbing and keeps you physically fit the way you look now?
Well, look, you got to, like anything, it's preparation meets opportunity, right? And on the football and the gridiron back in the day, we didn't just show up, right? We had a clear path on what we had to do to be able to take on. I was a wide receiver. I know you're a secondary guy. And for me to take on a guy like you, I had to bulk up. And for you to go up and, you know, hit on running backs and take on blockers and wide receivers, you know, had to have certain techniques. And there's really no different from what I need to do to prepare to put myself in the best possible position of climbing these mountains. And now, you know, as you said, I've climbed six of the seven highest mountains around the world. I've actually been on Denali, which is up in Alaska, twice. I've summited Kilimanjaro twice, one with Chris Long and his group, the Waterboy group. So I've been down there twice. And now I'm finally on the grand finale, the Super Bowl of all these things, Mount Everest, coming up in April of 2020.
In April?
Yep.
Do you get any anxiety prior to climbing?
Well, Mount Everest, I always get butterflies, no different than when... from the game when you and I used to be out there and they'd blow the whistle and you go through warm-ups and go through all those different things. The same thing happens whenever I get up and I'm at the front door of that mountain and I'm looking up and it's big and it's intimidating, right? And then the whistle blows and in this case, they say, let's go. And we start getting up and going to the mountain. And no mountain is an overnight. I mean, these are weeks and weeks and weeks on the ice and making your way up. But again, going back to just what do you have to do to get to that next play? What do you have to do to put that next step in front of you? And then as these hazards come up, whether it's a safety blitz or whether it's a big, gigantic crevasse or avalanche, you know, you take those on as you go.
So you see a blitz. How would you describe a side adjust on a mountain?
Well, yeah, I mean, serious side adjust, right? I mean, I've been in some crazy situations, right? And a lot of avalanches and going up ice walls that are 1,100 feet, 45-degree angle, you know, steep, where I've had people just roll over and just say, I'm not going anymore. And then what do you do? And it's like a fallen teammate. And it's just like, what do you do in that moment? And this is, the stakes are a little higher in terms of life and death than it is on a football field. But the principles are still there in terms of you got to have that mindset and you got to keep going.
When did climbing a mountain become a goal?
Well,
and why?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, Aeneas. And about 8 years ago, I was going through a really difficult time. I was married to my high school sweetheart or college sweetheart for 24 years, with her for 30. And it's just nobody's fault. She's a wonderful person, but it just we just kind of ran the test of time, and it was really heartbreaking for me. I've got my daughter here in studio today, my beautiful daughter Claudette. And
a Trojan, by the way.
A Trojan. Yeah, I can't believe that. Here. I'm a Husky, too.
NFL right? Network Studios. A Trojan.
Yeah. And, you know, having to split the family is really difficult on me. And after a couple of years, I just needed something to kind of really fuel and energize me. And I wanted to do something athletically great. And obviously, I couldn't go back and play in the NFL anymore. And so being from the Northwest, growing up in Seattle, it's pretty mountainous. I'm sure you played up there. And so I just started doing some research and I found that no NFL player had ever climbed the seven summits. I said, you know what? I'm going to be that guy. And I didn't really have any grand plans and I was in a pretty low spot in that time, you know, and it was just, it was really more of a place for me to get healed mentally and physically. Physically more from the standpoint of just not feeling great about myself. And it's been an amazing journey now, 8 years later, because I went from kind of the figuring out how I could accomplish things, and especially on Kilimanjaro on that first one, which I really didn't know what I was doing. And we got down to summit day, and it was about 17,000 feet, and I just quit, and I just couldn't go. And I sat down, and this porter who I was climbing with comes up to me, he's jamming some protein bars down my mouth, and he's kind of giving me that flipper, you know, one of those,
right?
And so I finally kind of came around, and he got me going. I made it to the top. I tagged the sign that's up there at 19,333 feet. And as I was coming down, I just burst into all these tears, and I hadn't cried in about 20 years, you know. And it was a moment. It was like happiness tears of like, hey, this is something that I can do. If I can get through this, metaphorically speaking,
right,
I can get through anything. And so from that moment in time, it just like revved me up. I got down, and then we went on the next one. You know, I found myself in Russia of all places, and that's the highest mountain in Europe. And then the next year, I found myself in Australia, and I climbed that mountain. And then I went down, you asked me earlier about what's the highest peak I've been on,
right?
23,000 feet in Argentina. It was amazing. We started with 12 people, and of the 12 people, only six made it. And we were having flying all these people off the mountain in these rescue helicopters.
Flying them off the mountain.
Oh, yeah, it was serious, yeah. Because there's this sickness that you get where your brain or your lungs swell. And when that happens, it's, you know, people can die. And so you got to get people down as quickly as you can. And so for some reason, my genetics have been so far, you know, set up where I can go high and I have large lung capacity, kind of like a Lance Armstrong used to have, you know, and it doesn't affect me. Now, we'll see how things play on Everest, but I can only tell you what I know today. And then after that, I went to Denali, and you get back to the weights. And up there, there's no assistance to help you to get up and down. So I'm carrying 137 pounds up a mountain, if you can imagine that.
A backpack?
It's a backpack and a sled, 137 pounds. And you're going up the steepest hills, deep snow, crampons, ice axe, all these things. You're all roped in. And, you know, to pull that much weight and to be and sleeping on the ice for 3 weeks in minus 40 degree weather is challenging. It's tough. And it's kind of like going through those old two-a-days that we used to go through, where it's really a test of attrition of trying to make it through 6 weeks, two-a-days, and getting ground and beat up,
wow,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard. So ultimately, I was able to climb that mountain. And this last January of this year, mm-hmm, I was down in Antarctica, which is a whole nother world.
Antarctica.
It's only penguins, and that's about it. You know, nothing actually breathing down there is around. And I was able to scale that mountain called Mount Benson. So here we are.
Being in an environment, you and I playing football, teammates are important.
Yeah.
Do you have teammates in
these
journeys?
You sure do. Yeah. And you sure do. And that's kind of been one of my things that has been frustrating for me, because in the NFL, you know, we have all different talents. You know, you were a phenomenal player,
Thank you.
You were at the upper end. But even at the lower end, which is probably where I was in somewhere, mm-hmm, you know, you either make it or you don't, right? If you're part of that 53-man, you always have better players, but there's nobody awful.
Correct.
Right? And in mountain climbing, in a lot of cases, there's no barrier of entry. So a lot of times you have people that watch a movie, right, about Everest or mountain climbing, and they want to be that guy. Just like some of the fans want to be those guys,
sure,
like you or I,
sure,
but they can't actually be out there. So you find yourself with those guys, and you're tied together with a rope, and your life is dependent on
with
them.
With those guys?
With some of those guys, not all of them, some of them, yeah.
At least with the league, you got to go through 3 years removed from high school,
yeah,
before you're eligible to get drafted.
Well, and even at that, you know, that's a wild card, right? That's
but what I'm saying, at least you have some kind of experience playing a game.
Yeah, exactly.
You're tied to some people,
yeah,
who you've seen no film on.
No. And they all think that they can make it and they can do it, and then you get into these very hairy situations. And, you know, they're not prepared. They haven't, we talked about preparation meets opportunity, all these things, they haven't done it. You know, on Everest, there's a 4% risk of when you go up there that you're not coming home. In other words, like this
4%.
Last year, like, you know, 13, 14 people died last year, right? But I was climbed with one of those guys who's still sitting up on the top of Mount Rainier, and he did not do the work. He did not do the preparation. So I look at it a little bit differently, like, let's focus on the 96% of the things that you can do, like move to a town that's at 6,000 feet, like go up in the mountains every single day, like make sure you're big and strong, you do CrossFit, and you put yourself in the best position possible to actually make that thing happen. So you come back, I see, you know, my goal is to see my daughters, and I want to, you know, I'm not going there to die. I want to go there and I want to have a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. So I got to have that kind of mindset to start.
Do you climb with pictures of your girls?
They're on my phone all the time right here. Ever said, and I'll tell you another thing about that. You're right. Because it when you get in the mountains and you're that long and that isolated, where there's no cell coverage and there's nothing else, you know, what I do have is I have memories and I do have my photos, and it becomes very important, especially when things get very stressful, that I focus on the things that matter the most. And the things that matter the most are my closest friends, my relationships, my daughters. And mm-hmm. without them, then what's life, right? It's all about that at the end of the day.
What you just described, and as other legends are listening, when you say preparation meets opportunity,
yeah,
you got committed to this.
Yeah, big time.
And some of the challenges sometimes as legends, the transition difficulties, besides just leaving the game, maybe not when you wanted to, it's the ability to get committed to something else. And you did it with mountain climbing.
Well, let me tell you about this too. And this is probably the biggest lesson that I've learned. And if I can impart this to anybody, I would say by stepping into the fear, it has created the greatest, not just opportunities, like not financial or anything, but just the greatest rewards coming back to me. The relationships, how I've grown, how I've really had to get introspective about myself, my feelings, where I want to go, get really clear. It's helped me be really committed towards something. And the best thing of all this is, and this really was brought to my attention when I was asked to be in the first class with Chris Long and Waterboys, mm-hmm. Nate Boyer, and that is this whole thing about going down to Africa, to Tanzania,
right,
raising money for the people in the Serengeti and the Maasai tribe and building water wells. And so I actually Jim Moore and I partnered together and raised $47,000 and built our own well, mm-hmm. which was really touching to both of us because we're the only ones in that group that did that. But something that's near and dear to my heart, And as things have gone, have all played out, I've now have this platform of 400,000 people that follow my journey. Hmm. And my daughter, my younger daughter, who's over in Arizona that we were just talking about, has a form of epilepsy. And so she has daily seizures. And so last year I called the National Epilepsy Foundation, and they want to partner with me on this climb. So my goal is to raise $29,029, which is the height of Mount Everest. Wow. And because now I have this platform, which I never thought of years and years ago, and it was really initially about me just getting out of my funk and giving me some direction to go, it is just, you know, become this gift that I can give back to her in terms of no money goes directly to her or me on my climb or anything, mm-hmm. but it goes to the National Epilepsy Foundation and just trying to create more awareness and dollars. So hopefully one day she can drive, she can ride a bike, she can play on monkey bars like all kids do.
You mentioned feelings. Introspection.
Yeah.
Football players, we don't want to a lot of time talk about feelings more.
No.
Tell me about that.
Well, I think it's a place as we're going through. From little league to
tough guys,
high school, college, tough guys, right? And it's hit them, go crush them, you know, take them out, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it took me 50 years before I figured out the actual
50,
the more vulnerable that I can become, the actual greater strength I can show. Because just like you walk in a room, you know, you carry something, right? And I now know that when I walk in a room, I carry something, right? And
what do you mean when you say carry
something?
Well,
I mean, I don't, I guess back in the day, I would have thought maybe that guy's going to think I'm a candy ass or something, right? And it's just like the more that you share, the more other people have been able to open up to me, and the more I've been able to, and I think my daughters have had a big component with that, with me too, because they're very sensitive and they're very communicative, and it's really helped me bring out the things that I really need to share and I need to communicate and be a better listener, you know, and things like that. And so, again, it has made my life way more rich because of my ability to share experiences that I've gone through, which have been honest and real.
Your daughters have helped you.
Yeah.
What was it like becoming vulnerable to your daughters as a man?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, I think they, you know, sometimes the student teaches the teacher, right? And I think the way they've been super honest, and the way, especially with, well, both of them have brought something a little bit differently to the table, but with my younger daughter who has epilepsy, and her sister, Claudette, who's sitting here, has dealt with it when she's had a grand mal, and she's laying there and she's in your arms and you don't know if she's going to die. And I get a call from her roommates in Tucson saying, you know, she just had a grand mal seizure, her eyes rolled back and she's turning blue, you know, what that does to somebody. And so like all this, the cool and the toughness and all that stuff kind of goes out the door. And what's really important is really what's real. And so that's, in one sense, that's made me open up more. And on the other side, with, I think, Claudette, it's just opened my heart and the way that we can come together as a family and make this thing, you know, help her in the best possible way.
You retired from the NFL and received legend status over 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Take us through your journey to business. What type of business are you in?
Well, first of all, I'm an executive for Sports Illustrated, so I'm in a pretty good spot now. And but coming out, and I think when I say this, and I think you would agree, that through the trust and some other programs they have now, it's a whole different animal today than it was back when we were retiring, certainly when I was retiring. I had no idea what to do, and I was down here in Los Angeles. And I just didn't have a sense of, I want to do something great. I just didn't know what that was going to be. And I would love to say that I retired from the game, but really I got thrown out. And that happens to a lot of guys, right?
Sure.
And so now you're in this position where, you know, what you want to do is like figure out how do you get to the next step. Ultimately, I ended up where I started my own businesses and marketing company. I would go to Microsoft, I'd go to Amazon, Expedia, companies that were really blossoming in the Seattle area, which we'd move back to. And I was doing all kinds of different projects for them. I did a significant amount of work for Starbucks, had a contract for over 14 years there. It was pretty lucrative. And so that just kind of led, one thing led to another, and it just really led me down the path of learning and curiosity and trying to figure things out. And so one thing led to another, which then led into the whole digital age and really wanting to have a thirst of a knowledge of like, where can that go and how can I fit my skill set? And so anyways, I'm with a group that we just took over Sports Illustrated.
Right.
It's a media company and it's been going great. And before that, I was at scout.com. A lot of people know that for the recruiting college content and high school recruiting. So, you know, been involved in that and it's really exciting to, you know, be full of life and especially be associated with an iconic brand like SI.
Now, early on in your marketing business, did you physically go to these corporations?
Yeah.
I mean, did you use relationships? How did you make contact and inroads into these corporations?
Well, you know, like in Starbucks, I just found out, everybody's been to a Starbucks and they have those green outdoor market umbrellas that you go sit under.
Right.
I did every single market green umbrella for Starbucks for 14 years in North America, South America, and Asia.
What do you mean you did them?
I manufactured them. So I didn't know how to do any of this. I found out that they were maybe looking for a new vendor. I called up Starbucks, the front line, and said, I'm looking for the person, the person at Starbucks. that is in charge of ordering all the outdoor market umbrellas. Didn't even know what one was. I got on the phone and said, hi, my name is Mark, and this is what I do, and I can give you and produce the best possible green outdoor market umbrella you've ever seen. And she goes, okay. So she said, it took me 2.5 years to get that account. By just keeping at it, figuring it out, I went overseas. I started a overseas, hired two people in Hong Kong that would then help me manufacture things in China. And then we'd route them back and put them on big containers and route them to the East Coast and the West Coast. And so I had no idea what I was doing. And at the time.
Who does that, Mark?
I don't know, but I did. I did for 14 years.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and it
sent them to private. Where does this come from? How do you go to Starbucks, look at an umbrella, and decide I will call them not knowing anything?
This has been the NFL Legends Podcast. To provide feedback or request a topic for discussion, email us at nfllegends@nfl.com.